Hi, it's Melissa Moore, and I'm so glad you're joining us for this very special hour on mental health and mental health awareness. That's what the whole month of May is about. And my friend Jason Hopkins, who is the president and CEO of NAMI Arapahoe and Douglas Counties, that is the National Alliance of Mental Illness. Hey there.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Well, thank you for being here. First off, how long have you been in your position there at NAMI?
So I've had many positions and worn different hats over the years, but I've been involved with NAMI about 11 years now.
Okay, but that's perfect, because one of the things I want to talk to you about is I feel like, especially since the pandemic, that we are talking more about mental health and mental illness, and that we've also seen an uptick in people coming forward and saying, hey, I'm struggling. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. So, you know, for all of the awful things that COVID gave us, one of the gifts it did give us is this capacity to talk about things that we're struggling with. So, as you just mentioned, we have seen a considerable increase in people willing to talk about their mental health, willing to talk about things that they're struggling with. You know, and I feel like that's really a place that we should have been well before now, but I'm grateful that we're there.
No, I'm grateful that we're there too. Do you think it's the fact that we're talking about it more, or is there an actual increase of people who are really struggling with their mental health these days?
That's a great question. And I don't know the answer scientifically speaking, but what I can tell you is statistically, there is not a single statistic in this space that proves what we are doing has improved. So suicidal completion rates are still astronomically high. Substance use and misuse, depression, anxiety, all of the traditional monitors mm-hmm. of people that are struggling, those statistics are not trending downward. So it tells me, at a minimum, we are continuing on a steady climb of people that are dealing with some pretty significant things.
Right. And they are. And they're heartbreaking. And we hear stories every day. And one of the questions that I always ask myself, and I think it's kind of about where I am in life, am I contributing to my mental health in a positive way or a negative way? And reevaluating that all the time.
Well, I think that's a great question. And I mean, obviously, self-reflection is so important in the journey of self-care and supporting yourself, because, I mean, we have a role in everything in life. And obviously, things that you do or don't do can contribute to the outcomes that you see that can impact your mental health. You know, for a little more transparency, I came to this work more than a decade ago after a pretty significant breakdown. I will call it a breakthrough today, but I will lovingly also say I lost my money, my mind, and my way. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if I had not been through that situation myself, I don't think I would have been able to show up in service of others and doing the work that we do today. But honestly, Melissa, you know, I was a guy that had a lot of privilege when I had my breakdown. I was a white guy that was educated, that had a supportive family. I had some resources, and it was impossible to get connected. And I would love to tell you that a decade plus later that it's better. And I'm not certain that it actually is.
I was going to bring that up. I have a sister that really suffers with her mental health. And she called me, she's like, I can't get help. I can't find people to listen to me. I'm calling doctors and they're saying, well, call this person. I call them and I can't get an appointment. I try to do an online appointment. And she said, I mean, she was at her wit's end and I was afraid for her. She's in a different state. I'm like, here's somebody saying, I'm struggling and I can't get help.
Well, and I would love to tell you that that is a one-off story, but the fact of the matter is that happens all the time. And look, mental health is one of those things that I think has had fits and starts forever, primarily because we don't have a system that sees your brain as part of your body.
Correct.
And the reality is we all have a brain, and therefore we all have mental health. Now, that is different than saying I have mental illness. Mm-hmm. Like anything, we can have mental health across a continuum that could be good or bad or anywhere along the way. So I think us getting to a place of really being able to normalize that we all have mental health is really what's been missing from the system. But if you think about mental health care historically, it was kind of a privileged model. Like you had to have money, you had to be connected, you had to know the right people to get, you know. And in many respects, it still kind of has that air about it. But the fact is, you know, unfortunately, the situation your sister's found herself in, it's not uncommon. But I think it comes back to people don't learn about mental health until it hits their home.
Right.
And even then, they often don't. And if you're struggling and or in crisis or anywhere along the continuum, where do you start? And while online is a wealth of information, as you well know, you can find anything you want, good or bad, looking online. And not everything is going to be the outcome that you're looking for just because you've done a solid Google search.
Right. Well, and my sister's convinced because of TikTok that she's got, and I'm not saying that she doesn't, because now she's almost convinced me that maybe I have adult ADHD.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like, well, crap. You know, now I've got this thing and where do I go with that thing? Like it's like all this knowledge is out there and all these terms are floating around, but trying to nail it down in my own life and say, there it is. Now, where's my resource? Very difficult.
Well, and really where you enter the conversation with all the work that you bring to the table that you've done over the course of your life and recognizing that you probably have some pretty skillful coping mechanisms
Yes.
that help you manage and navigate things. You know, there's something to be said. You know, I've done this work a long time. I led a peer support group for people that struggle with mental health for more than a decade. And after working with, you know, a couple of thousand people at this point, there's this element of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
So you get somebody that's had something like what I went through that happened. And I know this from personal experience. For the better part of 7-8 years, I was always on high alert. Like, what if this gets really bad again?
Mm.
And I think the fallacy of that approach dismisses all the work that you've done and all of the tools and resources that you have. So in your case, I think whether you got a diagnosis of ADHD or not, to be able to discern, you have some pretty savvy coping skills now that have probably served you well.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that's missing that could help you continue to improve your quality of life? I think what's missing in our traditional system is we don't often see the human first and recognize as humans, we are powerful in being able to navigate and manage many circumstances in life. And really what we're talking about when it comes to mental health is, are you in a place that life has become unmanageable?
Mm.
And I think it's really important to discern that if you're listening, you know, what are the tools and the resources that you do have available to you? Are you using them?
Right.
Are you taking advantage of them? Because many times just because we know what we need to do doesn't mean we're doing it. I mean, I should go to the gym every day. Do I do that? No.
No.
But, you know, I can't sit there and blame my doctor when I just had weighed this morning, you know, and, you know, it's there is an element of being able to shine that spotlight back on yourself and say, am I doing what I can to support myself? And again, I'm not negating when things become unmanageable, because there are times that we need additional support.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit, that unmanageable part. How does someone know, or do you just gutly know, I'm in an unmanageable spot? Like, I would tell you right now, I'm not. I'm fine.
Right.
As far as that goes. I'm not in an unmanageable spot. You know, I need to slow down. I need to, you know, I know what I need to do.
That's a great question. So the unmanageable piece, I think really, to simply put it, comes back to, you know, is what's going on with you robbing you of joy? Is it keeping you from doing obligations that you have or things that you love doing? Do you find that it's impeding your normal course of life, whatever your version of normal looks mm-hmm. like? Of course, it's different for all of us. But are there things that are happening or going on that really you no longer have the joy or effervescence to do, or find are just not something you can accomplish throughout the course of your day or week?
And that's something that you know personally at a gut level, I would imagine.
I think most of us do. I mean, I think there are certainly instances where we get so far in a hole that maybe we don't see any light and everything is darkness. You know, those are, of course, different instances. But I think for most of us, if you do a quick gut check with yourself, you can ask yourself some pretty discerning questions quickly and determine, mm-hmm. is this what I expected or how it used to be or what
right.
I thought it was going to be? And if you answer those questions with yourself honestly, you can normally decide, do I need to do something different here?
So let's say you get to that point and you're saying, man, I do need to do something different here. I don't know if I'm in crisis mode, but I know I need help before I get to that. Then what? Because that's where everybody gets stuck, is then what?
Well, I think that's a great question. And a lot of it depends on what it is that you're dealing with. But I often find if you have somebody that's trusted in your circle of support that you can just talk to about what you're struggling with. You know, I think about what Brené Brown has told us, that, you know, shame can't live in the light.
Correct.
You know, the reality is once you start talking about things, it takes on a different life and a different meaning in a way, positively, I think, in that you're not internalizing it anymore. And people are going to give you feedback about their experience of what they're seeing, which may look like validating. Yes, I've noticed this in you, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you should take a deeper look at that. I also want to encourage you to recognize that people can only meet you from their own place of understanding. So if you're reaching out to somebody in your circle of support, what I have found 9 times out of 10 when I have talked about things I'm struggling with, I will often get feedback about somebody's struggle that they've had, mm-hmm. which feels validating and not alone, which I think is really important. But again, I think it goes back to this being discerning around what's the one next step you can take. And if there's not a support system that you have in place, I mean, it would be, you know, maybe talking to your primary care physician about, you know, are there some meds that you need to get on board? That is a first step. That is not the step if you need something for longer term care. Finding a therapist, you know, if you have work resources, you know, your insurance, is there somebody in network that you can see? And I want to manage people's expectations, because I hear over and over again how hard it is to get connected to resources or find a therapist, or they don't take my insurance, or they're not seeing new patients. The thing that I can say, and especially post-COVID, the system was never designed to meet the demand we've placed on it. We had a system that was designed, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school here, to say was fairly reactionary, so it would meet people when they were really in kind of those more acute or crisis situations. Sure. And not across the board, but I think to generalize that, that's accurate. And really, what I think is being placed on the system today forces us to look at how do we build a system that's more responsive and recognize that, you know, if you're struggling with something that may be symptomatic of other things going on in your life, perhaps you've lost a job or a loved one or a relationship, you know, that does not necessarily imply that you have a mental illness. And what's gotten so mixed in these terms is we use the word mental health, we use the word mental illness, we use the word wellness, we use the word well-being.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, it's kind of a gut check on how you feel. And I will say, a mental illness is like any other illness, and there are modalities to treat it. And while it can look different in any individual, even with the same diagnosis, it is different.
Okay.
So being able to, again, discern, is this something that's symptomatic of what's going on in my life? Mm-hmm. And do I just need some extra support right now? Doesn't imply that you potentially are going to be on meds forever, that you'll be in therapy forever. Like, I think there's this element of, when we're struggling, we get into this mode of, oh my God, I'm going to have to do this forever.
Yes.
And I don't know what that looks like. Well, the reality is it starts with the next step.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to think about, because the question you asked is like, what's the next step?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not ready to talk to somebody about it, take a walk, get 15 minutes of sun on your head, ensure you're getting enough sleep, drink enough water, practice gratitude. I mean, those are some simple things 24/7, 365, you can access for free. And I can't tell you they'll fix your problems, but in a moment, they may change your mood state to where you have the capacity to say, oh, I need to take another step, and I can figure it out in this moment.
I think that's great advice. One thing you just touched on that I want you to explain more, explain the difference between mental illness and somebody who's struggling with their mental health.
Right. So I think it is the differences between the words mental health. Again, as I said earlier, if you have a brain, you have mental health.
Correct.
We all have it. And I like to look at it as a continuum. Like, you can be in an acute or a crisis situation on one end, and on the other end, you could be, you know, just as cool as a cucumber and life is going well for you. And then every point along the way, we can all fall on that. A mental illness, I would say, is more like having any other illness, having heart disease, having cancer, having diabetes. It's something that may need treatment, and that may require you to work with some professionals to navigate your unique set of circumstances. And it may be something that you have for a time and can manage with or without whatever treatment plan you come up with, or it may be something that you have to manage throughout the course of your life. But, you know, what I can tell you is, these are treatable situations, you know, but it's like anything. I think so many things in life, what you put into them is often what you get out of them. And I think there is a lot of fear for a lot of us about the unknown of, or waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, if I get involved in this, or if I start therapy and it unravels me, like, what am I going to do then? And am I going to feel worse than I do? And what I have experienced over the course of my career, it's not the stuff that you think is going to unravel you that does. It's the stuff that wakes you up in the middle of the night that you never saw coming.
Right.
I'm not trying to deter anybody from getting help. But I mean, at the end of the day, there is an element of what are you willing to do to support yourself in this time and situation? And if you're in a case that you cannot, how do we find you the resources to help you get into a better situation.
Yeah, I mean, and they're all big, huge questions. One of the things I've noticed going kind of back to the pandemic is there were a lot of people, a lot of essential workers that worked their way through the pandemic.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like a delayed mental health. I don't want to say crisis, but they're struggling now.
Well, I mean, those were people who in their hearts of service were showing up to do the jobs that they do in a very kind and gracious way, whether they wanted to or not. They
right.
did. And I think it's like anything. There's compassion fatigue in doing that work.
Yeah.
There's fatigue in just showing up for people. And nobody's really showing up for you in the same way. So I think there is an element that we put a lot on people and expected them to show up and in their best form to serve us during a time that was chaos for all of us.
Right.
And I don't know that anybody really had the foresight to say, well, who's going to take care of them? And I think we've seen that with clinicians. We've seen
yes.
that with emergency responders. Take your pick, grocery store workers,
Absolutely.
Delivery drivers. Like,
yes.
you know, we're all just doing our best. I mean, and if I had to take a step back, it feels like, and I don't know if anybody else agrees with this, it feels like collectively we're a pot that's about to boil over.
I say that all the time, and that's
right.
what I really feel like. It's like all of a sudden we went through the pandemic, and now it's become financial stress on
right.
top of what we went through then, and people are tapped out. People are exhausted.
Well, and I think that as humans, you know, if you're dealing with all of those external factors, you know, to add something else to it. I mean, a lot of it is you got to suck it up and keep going because I can't pay my bills if I don't.
Well, exactly. It's not like you can just lay on
right.
your couch and say, I'm just going to stay here and take some mental health time
right.
for myself.
And you may can for a day or two. But, you know, at the end of the day, if your life has become unmanageable and you're having a hard time slogging through the day or getting through and showing up for the things that you are obligated to showing up for, that's probably something worth looking at. And
yeah.
it's probably something worth talking to somebody about. And again, I'm going to go back to, you know, there is such power. I remember when I was rebuilding my life in my recovery journey, the times that I would show up and be vulnerable about my struggle and what I'd gone through, I cannot tell you the transformational conversations I had with people that would share their own story. And while I didn't think they were making it about them, what I really felt was like, you see me and you've just validated that you understand
right.
from this human place of struggle. Our situations don't have to be the same at all. But, you know, I remember the very first time I walked into the room at NAMI, I went to a support group. That was my first entree to NAMI. And then, of course, I got trained to be one and then, you know, ran on to lead the organization. But I remember not feeling like my story was like anybody else's in the room necessarily, but I felt welcome and I felt seen. And I think there's real value in being able to just be honest about what you're going through.
And isn't that what we all want to be? Is welcome,
absolutely.
Seen, heard, feel like what we're saying matters in life. I mean, that's
sure.
what we're all looking for, is those real connections with people.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the pandemic did, in my opinion, is it took away a lot of that. It took away that community, that sense that we all needed that and how much we needed each other.
Well, and what it did is it fostered this sense of building community digitally. You
yes.
know, we're doing it through Zoom and through FaceTime. And, you know, while there is real power of that connection, you know, you and I are sitting across from each other today. There is no replacement for that.
Nope.
While that may be a great second best, you know, I think there are byproducts of all the people that still work remote.
Yeah.
You know, while it would be wonderful for somebody like me, there are many people that it's not wonderful for.
Yeah.
And if you're in that situation of recognizing that maybe you need a little more interaction or contact and you don't want to go back to an office environment, like what are the things that you could do for yourself to get some social support outside of that? You know, are there groups you could join? Are there hobbies that you can be involved in? I go back to the power of these conversations really start around what are you willing to do?
Mm.
And it starts with taking one next step.
I love the personal responsibility that you put on it.
I think that's what's missing.
Yeah.
I really do. And again, it's not to vilify anybody in the conversation. I think we're all doing our best. But if you're not getting the results that you thought about, are you willing to do something different? And you know, so many of us look at the top of the staircase and think, I got to get there and I'm never going to get there. Well, you know, Melissa, from my understanding, you only get up the staircase one stair at a time. So, you know, my next right step approach of like,
yes.
what's the next step? And it could be as simple of, I brushed my teeth today. took a shower. Like, I took a walk around the block or went to get the mail. Like, it doesn't have to be insurmountable. One step will lead to the next step.
Yes.
So if you're focused on getting to the top of the staircase, I don't want to tell anybody you're doing it wrong. It's wonderful to have that goal, but you're not going to get there anyway other than taking the other steps that take you to get up the staircase.
Yeah, you really have to make those baby steps.
Agreed.
You know, and make them manageable goals.
Right.
You know, I mean, you think about weight loss, you know, people, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. I'm going to lose 10 pounds by the end of the week. And then
start with five.
Right?
Start with two.
Like, what? No, no. Don't set yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
Make them manageable. Make them steps that you know you can do. How do you feel like our kids and our teens are doing right now with mental health and coming through the pandemic? And it's been a lot.
You know, that's a great question. And I'm so glad you asked it. I think our kids are struggling. I mean, if you look at the pandemic specifically, we took youth and children out of their formative social years and expected them to adapt and learn in a very different way. I think the impact and negative effects of that have just begun to show themselves.
Agreed.
You know, we're working on an initiative through NAMI ADCO called Nobody's Perfect. And Nobody's Perfect, the website's www.nobodysperfect.community. Really is focused on being a hub of resources from a topic-centric, clinician-vetted way of looking at how do we get connected to resources. But I will tell you, we are headed for an iceberg.
Ugh.
You know, and I don't know what the iceberg looks like as much as it's going to be more of the things that are already catastrophic and detrimental to our youth as they move into adulthood. I think it's going to take years to play out.
Well, and I think I would agree with you. I've got a 19-year-old who was in high school when the whole thing happened. And I know how it, and I have seen how it's impacted her.
Right.
I've seen the lack of community and the lack of social skills from that time. And I mean, it impacted her education. And there were so many different ways. And I do, I would agree with you. And especially some of these younger kids too.
Right.
Like we're just seeing the start of it. And what is that going to look like for our kids?
I don't know, but we did a survey last year, and we surveyed youth and families. And what I can tell you was shocking to me. 72% of the youth that were surveyed, and we had a pretty big sample set, reported their mental health as fair or poor.
Oh.
And then you ask their parents the same question about the perception of their youth's mental health. And they reported that their youth's mental health was fair or poor about 30% of the time. So what we're seeing, and really what Nobody's Perfect is aimed to do, is to be this hub of resources for youth, for families and or parents and caregivers, providers and educators, and really recognizing there's a disconnect. And I think there is a disconnect for a couple of reasons, and I think technology plays a role in it. But one, if you think about it, our youth today are technology natives.
Mm-hmm.
They've always grown up having technology. They know it like the back of their hand.
Yes.
And then you've got adults or parents at this point that are adaptives to technology. So there's this disconnect where I don't know what my kid knows about it. And I think you go one of two ways. You either go all in trying to be the helicopter parent, or you disconnect. And I think we're still trying to figure out our mid-ground. And I think dismissing the fact that adults were impacted by COVID and not really understanding the world they live in. I mean, I just went to a recovery fair for youth this last week around youth who struggle with mental health and substance use disorders.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best events that I've been to of its kind. But what I have to say is it was heartbreaking to think that we had a room of 60 plus vendors working to support youth in mental health and substance use. Like, and that's just here in the Denver metro area.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
that is a lot.
The need is alarming. Our kids are more addicted than ever. I think there's a real responsibility if you're a parent that's listening to really understand the nuances of drug culture today and how different drugs are than maybe when you grew up. And vaping is a huge problem. Technology addiction is a huge problem. I mean, you kind of take your pick when we talked about coping skills that we develop along the way earlier.
Right.
I mean, the unfortunate thing about coping skills is there are healthy ones and unhealthy ones.
Sure.
And, you know, as humans, I think some of us are wired to get that dopamine hit that kind of brings us back to the unhealthy things. And, you know, I don't think it's any fault of our kids today. But the reality is we've got to support them because we're headed off a cliff.
And I think that's what every parent and every one of us in the community, we need to hear that message.
Well, and that's what's been so instrumental about the podcast that we have at Nobody's Perfect Community. It has really been, it's really about educating parents around the things that youth are struggling with today. Like, what are the things that you need to know? Because I feel a responsibility in doing this work, you know, to be able to show up and say, here's what we've learned. Like, let's share it with you. And now you have this information also. And that may guide or dictate how you show up in your home life with your kids.
Yes.
But I also think there's an element of, you know, as adults, just because you're a parent doesn't necessarily mean that you have all the healthiest coping mechanisms either.
Absolutely.
So it may shine a spotlight back on you and be aware that part of you helping your kid may look like you have to help yourself too.
And there's nothing wrong with
that. There's nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong with admitting to your kids, hey, I didn't realize I'm struggling too.
Well, frankly, I think it's a fabulous place to build rapport from.
I agree with you.
And trust and all the things that come with that. Like, I just, you know, I think we put people on a pedestal in human nature and just make them better than or doing more than they may actually be doing or perceive they've done in their own lives. And the reality is, I think we're all just doing our best.
I know.
You know, we're just trying to get through. And sometimes our best is not good enough. Like, we may have to take a next step.
Right. And that's what you talked about. You don't have to climb the whole stairs in one leap.
Right.
Take a step. But figure it out. And I think there's a lot of, like we talked in the very beginning of this, about self-reflection and honesty and all of that. Do that with yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, if you can't shine the spotlight back on yourself, it's really hard to authentically show up for somebody else from a place of empathy and understanding.
Yes.
And I think there's an authenticity that comes when you own your own role. And we all have a role, good or bad, in most things in life. And I think the more you can get closer to owning your role in whatever you're struggling with, I think the better your outcomes become because you're more realistic about what you're dealing with.
Right. Well, and you're always going to be the constant in your life.
Correct.
So get honest with you. You're not going anywhere.
The longest and the best relationship you're going to have in life is the one with yourself.
Absolutely. All right. So NAMI offers a lot of great services as we wrap up here. For folks that want to get in touch with you at NAMI, who want to maybe touch into your services, I know there's classes. I mean, there's tons on the website.
Right.
But give me just a kind of a quick highlight of some of the things that you offer.
Yeah. So we offer education, support, and outreach programs for individuals struggling with mental health, as well as their family members and loved ones. We do support groups. We do education classes around mental health, typically around people who have more chronic or persistent mental illness, but we're a pretty good referral source for resources and information. Our website in Arapahoe and Douglas counties is NAMIADCO.org. And as I mentioned, our Nobody's Perfect initiative is nobodysperfect.community. And we have fabulous resources there for youth and families, providers, educators, as well as our podcast, which is a really great resource and tool. And if somebody wants to get connected with me, you can email me. I'm super responsive, outreach@namiadco.org. But yeah, get connected. There are places to do so.
I was just going to say that is, I hope, you know, as we are raising the awareness during Mental Health Awareness Month, that's the big one. Get connected.
Right.
Reach out. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to wonder by yourself. There is a community of people that are becoming stronger and bigger that want to help you.
Well, I think it's the foundation of what we all strive for.
Yeah, I so agree. Jason Hopkins with NAMI Arapahoe and Douglas Counties, thank you so much for being here for this part one of our special Mind Matters on Cozy 101.1, all about mental health awareness here in the month of May. Now, coming up here in the second segment, we're talking to Kevin Peterson. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist, also an addiction expert, and we're going to discuss here in just moments what the pandemic has done to our mental health and addictions.